This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine two neighbors, right? And they are aggressively building this massive, spiked, 10-foot steel fence between their yards.
Oh, wow. Sounds hostile.
Extremely. Like, they're bringing in heavy machinery to lay a concrete foundation. But at the exact same time, while pouring the concrete, they're casually passing a handwritten dinner party invitation over the top of the fence to each other.
Yeah, that is, I mean, it's a completely bizarre, contradictory image.
Right. But that almost contradictory scenario is exactly what the United States and China are doing right now in the global technology space.
It really is this fascinating duality. We're essentially watching the two largest economies on Earth, you know, simultaneously prepare for these high-level diplomatic talks while furiously locking down their respective tech ecosystems just to ensure the other side can't peek over that fence.
Exactly. And welcome to today's deep dive. We are so excited to have you, the listener, on this three-way intellectual journey with us.
Yeah, glad you're here.
Because today we are going to figure out how these massive, contradictory geopolitical reflections are moving markets, how they're reshaping global supply chains, and perhaps most importantly, how the shockwaves are going to ripple all the way down to your stock portfolio and, weirdly enough, even your monthly phone bill.
Right. And our map for this journey today is an incredibly detailed, comprehensive report and commentary provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker.
It's a fantastic resource.
It really is. The research just brilliantly synthesizes these massive movements across government policy, stock markets, and consumer tech. It really paints a picture of a global ecosystem that is fracturing and rebuilding itself in real time.
Yeah, and according to lawyer Kyungjin Kim's commentary, the defining keyword for this week's global tech landscape is the mirror.
The mirror.
We are seeing these superpowers reflect each other's defensive moves almost identically, just, you know, slightly distorted. Okay, let's unpack this.
Well, let's start right at the top of the geopolitical board, because right now there's this really fascinating dual-track strategy unfolding.
Huh?
On the diplomatic front, U.S.-China bilateral AI talks are officially scheduled for this September.
Which is huge.
It is. These actually mark the first official AI talks under the new Trump administration.
And the stakes there are just, I mean, they're astronomical. The U.S. representative is going to be Treasury Secretary Bessent, and they've strategically scheduled these talks for right before Chinese President Xi Jinping's visit to the U.S. on September 24th.
Right. The timing is totally deliberate.
Oh, absolutely. They are sitting down to discuss truly existential threats. We're talking AI and military applications, vulnerabilities in the global power grid, automated threats to financial systems, and obviously massive employment shifts.
Yeah. But before we delve into the actual mechanics of the resulting trade war here, I do need to make something explicitly clear to you listening.
Good call.
In this deep dive, we are impartially reporting on these geopolitical and trade strategies strictly based on the source material provided. We aren't endorsing the political viewpoints, the policies, or the actions of either the U.S. or the Chinese governments.
Mm-hmm.
Our mandate today is purely to analyze the data, unpack the mechanisms, and explain to you why this is happening.
Exactly. We are just reading the board. And honestly, the moves on this board are wild.
They really are.
Because while they are setting the table for these friendly diplomatic talks in September, the Financial Times is reporting that China's Ministry of Commerce is simultaneously considering a massive expansion of its export controls.
Basically pouring the concrete for that fence.
Yes. They are designing these new regulations to directly mirror the export controls the U.S. has already put in place against them.
And this is where that mirror concept from lawyer Kyungjin Kim really takes shape. Because China is looking at throwing a heavy blanket over AI models and chip design technology.
What does that look like in practice, though?
Well, we're talking about potentially blocking the offshore transfer of AI training data, for one. They also want to restrict foreign entities from downloading their model weights and actually stop Western companies from acquiring Chinese AI startups altogether.
Okay, let's break down why that matters to the everyday tech industry. Model weights, for those who might not know, are essentially the brain of the AI after it has done all its learning.
Right. It's the finished product.
Exactly. So if you restrict foreigners from downloading those weights, you are basically saying you can't have our finished brain. You have to go build your own from scratch.
Yeah, it's a complete cutoff.
And if this mirror image regulation is actually completed, the global AI ecosystem completely splits into two isolated halves, one Western, one Eastern. And I mean, reversing that kind of infrastructural division is nearly impossible once the concrete drops.
Yeah, totally. Because once you put up that wall and lock down your data, you just can't rely on the global supply chain in the same way anymore. You're forced to build your own tools. And the immediate consequence of these fences going up is that China is being aggressively forced to build out its own physical infrastructure entirely in-house.
And the sheer scale of the capital moving internally to achieve this is, I mean, it's staggering.
It's unbelievable. Take DeepSeek, for example.
Oh, man. The DeepSeek numbers in this report are hard to even wrap your head around. They just finished a massive initial funding round, and literally a month later, they are already in talks for a second round of $1.5 billion.
Which is just a crazy turnaround time.
Right. Their pre-money valuation just hit $71 billion. For context, a 37% increase in valuation in a single month for a company of that size is astronomical.
Yeah.
That is tens of billions of dollars in value created in 30 days.
But look at what they are planning to do with that $1.5 billion. They aren't just writing smarter software algorithms. They are using that capital to pour concrete.
Literally building the infrastructure.
Exactly. They are planning to build their own dedicated data centers and, crucially, develop their own 7-nanometer inference chips in partnership with SMIC, which is China's premier semiconductor manufacturer.
Okay, I want to pause on the terminology for a second because we hear 7-nanometer inference chip thrown around in tech news a lot.
It's a buzzword for sure.
Yeah. So a nanometer is a billionth of a meter, right? So 7 nanometers is roughly the size of a few dozen atoms. It refers to how tiny the transistors on the microchip actually are.
Right. And the smaller the transistor, the more you can pack onto a single chip, which makes it faster and way more energy efficient.
Exactly. But an inference chip is different from a training chip.
Yeah,
right?
Yes, it is. So think of training an AI model like sending someone to medical school.
Okay.
It takes years, massive amounts of textbooks, and incredible effort. And in computing terms, that requires very specific, massive processing power.
Makes sense.
Now, inference is when that person is finally a doctor, and you just ask them to diagnose a cough. They use what they've already learned to give you an answer quickly. Inference chips are optimized for that rapid-fire, everyday questioning.
Oh, I see. So DeepSeek wants to build their own chips to handle the billions of everyday questions their AI is going to be asked.
Exactly.
But wait, let me push back on this hardware obsession for a minute.
Okay, sure.
We are talking about DeepSeek spending billions to build physical chips, but the software side of Chinese AI is moving so fast, it seems to almost undermine the need for proprietary hardware monopolies.
How do you mean?
Well, the report mentions Moonshot AI is releasing the full weights of its Kimi K3 model. This is an open weight model with 2.8 trillion parameters.
Which is massive.
It's huge. And it just scored a 57.1 on the Artificial Analysis Intelligence Index. That puts it barely 2 points behind top tier closed US systems like GPT 5.6 Sol. So if open weight models are essentially erasing the performance gap and giving away the brain for free, I mean, won't that completely destroy the pricing power of big tech monopolies? Why spend billions fabricating custom chips if the software is becoming a free commodity?
What's fascinating here is that the software becoming a commodity is exactly why they need to control the hardware.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Think about it. If the models themselves are open and available to anyone, the bottleneck shifts. Mm-hmm. The bottleneck is no longer who holds the smartest proprietary algorithm. It's who can actually afford the electricity and the compute power to run it.
Oh.
DeepSeek realizes that if everyone has the same brain, the winner is whoever can build the fastest nervous system to support it.
Ah, so because the software is essentially free, the real estate war shifts entirely to the physical servers and the silicon.
Exactly. And by moving to build their own 7-nanometer inference chips, DeepSeek is trying to fundamentally reduce their reliance on NVIDIA.
Because NVIDIA runs everything right now.
Right. NVIDIA essentially has a chokehold on the hardware required to run these massive models. If DeepSeek can build their own silicon, it decentralizes the global demand for high bandwidth memory, or HBM, which is currently tied tightly to NVIDIA's specific architecture.
We should probably explain high bandwidth memory, too.
Of course.
Imagine standard computer memory is like a 2-lane road connecting a city to a factory. It works fine for normal traffic, but if you suddenly try to move a million trucks of data at once for an AI model, you get a massive traffic jam.
A huge bottleneck.
Right. So high bandwidth memory, or HBM, is like stacking computer chips like a skyscraper and connecting them vertically. It turns that 2-lane road into a 100-lane superhighway.
That's a great analogy.
AI demands that superhighway, and right now developers are feeling the sting of how scarce that highway space actually is. I mean, DeepSeek's V4 API just implemented peak time pricing to manage the traffic.
Yeah, because the compute power is finite. If you use their API to query the AI during Beijing peak hours, specifically 9 a.m. to noon and 2 p.m. to 6 p.m., they actually double the cost of the query.
That is wild. It's just like surge pricing on an Uber, but for artificial intelligence. You are paying a premium just to get the machine to think during rush hour.
Because infrastructure is the real battleground.
Yeah.
Which actually brings us to a critical technological leap mentioned in lawyer Kungjin Kim's report.
Right, the Huawei development.
Yes, Huawei just unveiled the Atlas 850E air-cooled supernode.
And that caught my eye immediately, because usually when we talk about massive AI supercomputers, we are talking about really complex liquid cooling.
Yeah. Exactly.
You picture these massive server farms with complex plumbing, you know, tubes of specialized coolant running everywhere just to keep the processors from literally melting under the intense heat they generate.
And liquid cooling is a structural engineering nightmare. It requires entirely new data center architecture, reinforced floors just to hold the sheer weight of the liquid, and specialized coolants that won't instantly destroy electronics if a pipe happens to leak.
It's incredibly expensive.
Very. But Huawei has managed to develop processor architecture that allows supernode-level computing power using traditional air cooling.
So basically just massive, highly efficient fans and heat sinks.
Exactly.
So you're telling me a middle market data center housed in a standard industrial building that doesn't have the millions of dollars required for liquid cooling infrastructure can now just buy these Huawei servers, plug them in, and run top-tier AI processing.
Yes. It dramatically lowers the barrier to entry. They're essentially democratizing the physical infrastructure of AI.
Wow. Okay, so we have China rapidly fabricating its own chips, open sourcing massive trillion parameter models, and creating hardware that bypasses the need for expensive liquid cooling.
Yeah, it's a huge shift.
This massive internal pivot has to be sending shockwaves through the global supply chain. The tech world is heavily interconnected. Mm. If China stops buying from the outside, the suppliers who built their empires on that demand are going to get crushed.
Oh, absolutely. And the impact is hitting South Korea the hardest. The Korean memory chip market is essentially the middleman caught between these two geopolitical fences.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. SK Hynix, one of the massive Korean memory chip manufacturers, just released their Q2 earnings today.
And the numbers look absurd on paper.
They really do. Their operating profit is at 60.4 trillion won. To put that in perspective, that's roughly 43 billion U.S. dollars, and it is up 556% year over year.
A historic jump in profitability, yet the market reaction has been remarkably cold.
Because they missed the consensus expectation of 65 trillion won, the market is treating a 556% increase as a disappointment simply because the mass production of their next generation HBM4 chips, that next version of the 100-lane superhighway we talked about earlier, got delayed from Q2 to Q3.
You also have to look at how their main rival, Samsung, is playing the board right now. There were heavy rumors that Samsung might do a U.S. ADR listing.
Which is an American depositary receipt. It essentially allows a foreign company to list its stock on an American exchange to raise U.S. capital, much like SK Hynix did successfully, right?
Exactly.
But doing an ADR means you basically invite the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission into your books.
And Samsung explicitly denied the rumors. They are choosing to rely on their massive 147 trillion won cash pile, which is over $100 billion in cash, to fund their operations.
Wow.
Yeah. They want to avoid U.S. disclosure requirements and the severe risk of class action lawsuits that come with listing in America. It is a highly defensive, conservative maneuver.
And they have a very good reason to be defensive, and it comes right back to the mirror. CXMT, or Changzhen Memory Technologies, is holding a massive $8.6 billion IPO on China's Star Market.
Now, for context, the Star Market is basically China's equivalent of the NASDAQ. It's where their high-growth tech companies list.
Right. This is the biggest Asian IPO of the entire year. CXMT is now the world's fourth largest DRAM memory maker. And lawyer Kumjin Kim's report notes that Apple is even testing their technology for devices sold within China.
This is a seismic structural shift in the global hardware market. If we connect this to the bigger picture, lawyer Kungjin Kim highlights that the CXMT IPO is the exact moment Chinese memory technology proves it has independent, massive value in the public capital markets.
Yeah.
Because for years, the memory chip market has been this cozy oligopoly. It was completely controlled by a big three: Samsung, SK Hynix, and the American company Micron.
And now, suddenly, there's a big four. A heavily capitalized, state-backed competitor has entered the ring. That is going to trigger intense price competition. I mean, if CXNT starts undercutting Samsung and SK Hynix on price, profit margins are going to evaporate.
And this impending price war explains the absolute chaos we are seeing in the Korean stock market right now. The KOKO SPI index, which is South Korea's equivalent to the S&P 500, dropped 28.5% from its June peak, before seeing a recent 3.56% dead cat bounce.
Calling it chaos is almost an understatement. The volatility hit over 60%. That is double the volatility of the Japanese Nikkei 225.
Yeah, it's wild.
It's higher volatility than Bitcoin. They had 7 circuit breakers triggered in July alone. And just to clarify, a circuit breaker is an emergency regulatory measure.
They just halt everything.
Exactly. When the market is panicking and selling off so violently that prices are in free fall, the regulators literally pull the plug and halt all trading to force everyone to take a breath and calm down. They had to do that 7 times in 1 month.
It's unprecedented.
Yet, amidst all this historic panic, Citi is maintaining a $10,000 target for the KOKO SPI, calling this a technical adjustment and a prime buying opportunity. I have to ask, how can major analysts confidently maintain a 10,000 target when we are seeing crypto levels of extreme volatility and the market shutting itself off to prevent a total crash?
It really boils down to whether you believe the foundational demand for memory chips is broken or simply delayed. Lawyer Kungjin Kim's analysis points out that today's SK Hynix earnings are the ultimate litmus test for the market's true health. Yes, the HBM4 chips were delayed to Q3, but because SK Hynix operates on long-term fixed-price contracts with their buyers, their profit floor is still incredibly high and secure.
That makes sense.
So if the recent 28% drop was just because market expectations got too greedy, expecting 65 trillion won instead of a mere 60.4 trillion, then Citi is entirely right. The fundamentals are strong, and it's just a technical correction.
But if that drop is happening because institutional investors foresee CXMT eating into that long-term market share with cheaper Chinese memory chips, then it's not a technical blip. It's a permanent structural shift.
Exactly. And that structural shift isn't just contained to enterprise data centers and billion-dollar chip fabrication plants. It is actively spilling out into the consumer world. Geopolitics is beginning to dictate the physical products we buy and how we actually pay for our daily digital interactions.
Yeah, let's bring this down to the everyday consumer level, because these fragmented global standards are starting to determine what technology is actually allowed in our homes.
Oh, totally.
The report highlights a massive regulatory split in the robotics sector. Unitree, a major Chinese robotics company, just started commercial sales of its advanced humanoid robots in Europe.
And the timing of those European sales is deeply significant. They launched in Europe just 3 weeks after the U.S. Pentagon officially designated Unitree as a Chinese military company.
3 weeks. The contrast is blinding.
It really is.
The U.S. House of Representatives is pushing the GUARD Act specifically to ban these robots from operating in America. They are citing severe security risks like vulnerabilities in the robot's Bluetooth connections, and the fear that LIDAR and camera sensor data mapping the inside of American homes and businesses will be sent directly back to servers in Beijing.
Right. Meanwhile, Europe is just opening its doors and putting them on the market.
Yeah. And this isn't a niche novelty market anymore. The report notes that Chinese humanoid exports are booming. There are over 400 different commercial models available, and they already make up more than half of the entire global market.
Which is just a brilliant observation by lawyer Kungjin Kim.
Yeah.
We are watching the regulatory fracturing of the West in real time.
How so?
Well, we saw this exact same playbook unfold with electric vehicles over the last 2 years.
Oh, right.
The U.S. throws up a massive tariff wall and bans Chinese EVs, citing security and market dumping, while Europe allows them in to meet their green energy goals. Now, that identical conflict is repeating with autonomous robotics.
It puts the entire global supply chain in an impossible position.
Oh, a cool nightmare.
Right. Like, if you are a Korean parts manufacturer making Figma motors, do you build components for the Chinese robots that are selling wildly in Europe and risk angering the U.S.? Or do you bow to U.S. pressure, cut ties with Chinese firms, and literally lose out on 50% of the global market share?
It is a geopolitical tightrope. And companies are being forced to pick a side. But, you know, beyond the hardware, the consumer experience itself is being fundamentally rewritten, particularly in how we consume data. The report details the birth of what is being called the token economy.
Okay, this part of the report blew my mind.
Yeah, it's wild.
Chinese telecom giants, companies like China Telecom, China Mobile, and China Unicom, which service hundreds of millions of users, are rolling out AI token subscriptions. China Telecom has a base plan where for 9.9 yuan a month, which is like less than $1.50 in US currency, you get a monthly allowance of 10 million AI tokens.
And to put that 10 million token figure in perspective, depending on how complex your questions are, that could cover a few intense coding sessions where you're asking the AI to write and debug heavy software.
Right.
Or it could easily cover a month of casual daily chatting and email drafting. The telecom executives are publicly declaring that this token operation is now a core business strategy. They are deliberately trying to transition the entire consumer market from a traffic economy to a token economy.
It really is a total paradigm shift in how we think about the internet. For the last 20 years, we've essentially been living at an all-you-can-eat buffet. You pay your provider for a certain number of gigabytes of data, the pipe coming into your house, and once you have that data, you just consume as much content as you can swallow.
Exactly. Netflix, web browsing, emails, it's all just data flowing through the pipe.
But moving to a token economy fundamentally changes the transaction. You aren't just paying for the pipe anymore. You are paying to use the machine on the other end.
It's like leaving the buffet and walking to a digital arcade.
Yes. You literally have to put a quarter in the machine for every action. You are paying for the machine's thoughts. Every prompt you type, every image generation, every AI summary of an article costs a fraction of a token.
And if this massive scale experiment works in China, lawyer Kunjin Kim notes that telecom companies in Korea, Japan, and eventually the West are highly likely to follow suit.
Really? Do you think so?
Definitely. The raw electricity and infrastructure costs of running AI at a global scale are simply too high for it to remain a free, unlimited service forever. The tech giants are eventually going to pass that compute cost onto the consumer.
Wow. Okay, let's zoom out and recap the incredible ground we've covered today, because it's been a lot.
A huge amount.
We started by looking at the mirror. The U.S. and China simultaneously shaking hands at the diplomatic table while aggressively raising mirrored export controls to block each other from accessing AI data and chip designs.
Which subsequently forces internal innovation out of sheer necessity. We analyzed China's explosive hardware pivot, watching DeepSeek funnel billions into custom 7-nanometer inference chips, and Huawei democratizing AI computing with air-cooled supernodes that bypass the need for expensive liquid cooling, drastically reducing their reliance on Western technology.
Right. And from there, we tracked how those shifting tectonic plates caused a literal earthquake in the Korean memory chip market.
Yeah, poor SK Hynix.
Seriously. SK Hynix is pulling in 60.4 trillion won in profit, but still missing sky-high market expectations, while a new Chinese competitor, CXMT, goes public on the star market and threatens to turn a comfortable three-way oligopoly into a vicious four-way price war, sending the KOSPI index into a spiral of circuit-breaking volatility.
Which ultimately leads to a fractured consumer reality.
Yeah.
We are looking at a near future where a humanoid robot is a common household appliance in Europe, but strictly banned as a national security threat in the United States.
Lawyer Kyungjin Kim's insights really drive home a critical point. Geopolitical posturing, API surge pricing in Beijing, memory chip yield rates in Seoul. These aren't just abstract, high-level economic concepts for academics to debate.
No, not at all.
They are active physical forces rewriting the rules of your stock portfolio's performance today, and very soon they will dictate exactly how you interact with your daily technology.
It all connects, and it leaves us with a really profound question about our digital future.
Let's hear it.
If the major telecom companies succeed in transitioning the global market from a traffic economy, where we simply consume unlimited data, to a token economy, where we pay for every single ounce of AI processing power, how will that alter our relationship with our devices?
That's a great point.
Will we one day find ourselves at the end of the month carefully rationing our digital thoughts and AI queries, much in the same way we used to anxiously ration our text messages back in the early 2000s?
Now there is a thought to chew on the next time you casually ask an AI to write a quick email for you. Will that email cost you a quarter? We hope you've enjoyed diving into these murky, mirrored waters with us today. Keep questioning the consensus, keep looking past the headlines to see how the machinery actually works, and most importantly, keep diving deep. Until next time.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
For more from the same network, follow Daily AI News from Seoul on Apple Podcasts.